Hey folks, I'm Jesse, and you're so cool, Dave!
Hi, my name's Dave, and Jesse, you've got to have faith for this podcast to work. Welcome to...
From Dream to Scream to Scream!
You're crazy to know who I am, aren't you? All right. I'll show you.
She hates me. Like others.
My dear. You see, I hurt you because I love you.
Synthetic flesh.
You wouldn't run out on me now. You wouldn't do that to me.
Wouldn't I?
He ain't my dad.
No, and he ain't no preacher neither.
She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
You wouldn't be able to do these awful things to me if I weren't still in this chair.
But you are, Blanche. You are in that chair. You're a vile, sour little bitch.
What have you done to its eyes?
He has his father's eyes.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
I met this 6-year-old child with this blank, pale, emotionless face. The blackest eyes.
He's gonna laugh at you. They're all gonna laugh at you.
I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains. I'm gonna bash them right the fuck in.
This is going to be extremely painful, Mr. Bell.
You son of a bitch, you moved the cemetery, but you left the bodies, didn't you?
You gotta be fucking kidding.
Please, God.
This is God.
You have
to have faith for that to work.
So how you been, Dave?
Not too bad, Jesse, baby. How you been?
Yeah, not too bad, man.
Good.
We're here to talk about a real classic first tonight, Fright Night.
That's the one, 19... Give us a year.
1985, I believe.
Yes.
What would you do if you accidentally discovered the house next door was occupied by something not human? Something horrifying. Something unspeakably evil. No one believes you.
I didn't have a nightmare.
Not your mom.
They did kill a girl over there.
Not your girlfriend.
Charlie, is this some sort of a trick to get me back?
Not even the police.
Look, I know it's crazy. I know that, but look, Lieutenant!
It knows that you know. You'll do anything to protect yourself. But it will do anything to protect its secret. Fright Night. If you love being scared, this could be the night of your life.
Seen this flick when I was tender age of probably about 7, I think I was.
Yeah, I saw it about when I was at the tender age of about 32, I think.
You saw it at the theatre when I first
saw it at the theatre in the city, the Palladium Cinema in Bourke Street. And I remember every bit of it. So what's your reaction after seeing it? When did you last see it, Jesse?
Probably about maybe 5 or 6 months ago. It's at least like bare minimum annual watch for me. I mean, I probably at this point, I know the film almost at ad nauseum. I've seen it that many times, but never gets old, always gets something out of it. It's really a classic film.
And what appeals to you? What do you like it? Can you relate to the character?
I just love the characters, you know, like, especially the character of Evil Ed, you know, played by...
Stephen Jeffries?
Yeah, Stephen Jeffries, that's it. And of course, Chris Sarandon's just phenomenal. Probably my all-time favourite vampire, I'd say.
Yeah, well, I relate to it as well because of what you just said, those two actors. And, of course, I love Roddy McDowall. Always liked him. Always loved him. Even when he was a kid, he was great.
Yeah.
And just the concept's so good, though, isn't it? Because you could be in that situation yourself.
But not so much
a vampire, but somebody's up to mischief next door and you try to warn people about him and they don't believe you.
Yeah, well, this concept, yeah, I mean, kind of started with, like, Rear Window, wouldn't you say? And then...
Even a bit further back, there's a movie called The Window with Bobby Driscoll about a young boy. He's about 10 years old and he sees a murder being committed in his apartment block. He tries to tell people about it and they won't believe him until he's in danger. So that concept's been around for a Boy Who Cried Wolf, I think, is the the old
Okay, and then after this, yeah, you've seen similar things like Suburbia and all that. But, like, yeah, like, it's a very, like, human kind of a story in a way. Even though it does involve a vampire, it's kind of like, what would you do? You know, this happened in your neighborhood, like, right next door to you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just frightening. And the director, Tom Holland, write it or did he co-write it?
I believe he wrote it,
Yeah, the whole story.
Yeah, and he, of course, he directed Child's Play as well, which is a favourite of mine, the original Child's Play.
Yeah, same here. And he's the pity he's not doing much now, because I think the last thing he ever did was that Tom Holland's, what was
Twisted
it called?
Twisted Tales, I believe.
Yeah, Twisted Tales. And I think, did you say two seasons?
I think so.
I haven't seen the second. I've seen the first. Some of them are good, some of them are a bit, you know, so-so. But he does a fantastic job here.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, certainly a guy that yeah, has a lot of talent and should get more of an opportunity, I think. Yeah, I mean, nowadays, a lot of those guys are being put out to stud, you know. They don't get the work that they still should be getting, you know, because they've proven themselves time and time again, you know. But also, yeah, this character of Charlie, you know, kind of reminds me of, you know, bits of myself, you know, growing up, you know, when I'd, you know, be... You know, getting up to no good, being a teenager, you know, with a girl in the room and there'd be a horror flick playing in the background.
Yeah, well, the same here. I didn't have a girl in my room. I had something else, but I can't explain what it was. But, no, that was, it kind of, you identify with the character.
Oh, yeah, of course. But, I mean, there's a little bit of me, you know, in you know, Charlie and also Evil Ed, you know, like I was always kind of clowning around like his character does a lot of the time. He's got some brilliant lines of dialogue in this movie, Stephen Geoffrey's. Like, that character on paper, like, would kind of, yeah, you know, with the wrong actor, that could be a horrible performance, you know? Like, but he just breathes so much life into that character, you know what I mean? Like, and when he has his demise, it's, you really feel sorry for the kid, you know?
You do, yes, and you do really empathy for him. I don't, well, probably a lot of people have seen the movie, so it's not spoiling it.
Oh, yeah. But that goes without saying, folks. I hope you've seen the movie, because we're going to spoil the hell out of it. As much as I love Chris Wren's character, he kind of probably is the best thing about the movie, possibly. But I kind of do, I must admit, I think of Evil Ed, that's pretty much the first thing I think of.
He steals the movie.
Yeah, as much as I kind of, and I've got a conflict about that, because I think he kind of does, but everyone else in the movie is still very good. Like, Roddy McDowell is brilliant in this movie, you know, and so is Chris Sarandon, you know. And even William Ragsdale, yeah, even though he's kind of probably got the dullest part in the movie, yeah, he's still very likable as the lead and stuff. But it's just a very iconic film, you know what I mean? Like, it's easily the first thing I think of, even when I just think of, like, vampires, you know what I mean? Like, it's not Dracula, or, you know, even, I've never seen it, but Nosferatu I need to see sometime. But when I think of vampires, this is the initial film that I think about, you know?
Well, the thing with it is, too, it's got a good balance of threat to it with the story of the vampire and his life being threatened and caused by him, and the comedy and the story and the music as well. Photography is very good too. It's very claustrophobic in some scenes because you use a lot of close-ups, and the print. I don't know if you've seen, a lot of people have seen the print on DVD. It was a bit substandard, but now it's been released on Blu-ray. I think the last few years, and I think there's a documentary coming out. Oh, it's already been released, and you're going to buy that, Jesse?
Yeah. It's been out for I think about maybe the last 6 months or more. Yeah, I really want to see that. It's always a film that I thought needed a really good documentary, because yeah, all the DVDs and Blu-rays, I think the Blu-rays had like a few little features on it, I think, didn't it? And then there's a commentary with,
But on this Blu-ray, there's only a trailer, and that's it.
Okay, but that's the American release. It's pretty good, though. It's one of the best times I've ever seen, the film look.
Really? Wow. Yeah. And we're watching on a, 50-inch plasma?
Yeah, about that. Another thing I wanted to mention, this has got something in it that a lot of horror films, don't have, which is heart, you know what I mean?
Oh, soul.
And soul. Like, yeah. Even the character of Jerry, like, you kind of feel sorry for this guy a little bit, because you kind of get the idea of when he breaks into Charlie's room, he kind of gives him a warning, you know what I mean? Like, leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. Just forget about me, Charlie, you know? And he says to him, I'm paraphrasing, but I believe the line is, you know, I'll give you something I don't have, a choice.
Yeah.
you know? And so kind of makes you think, even though it's never really explained or gone into, like, you know, you kind of get the idea that, you know, he didn't choose to be a vampire. He didn't choose to be this you know, creature. You know what I mean? So, yeah, even, you know, as much of a threat and the villain that he is, and you do kind of, yeah, you can have a little bit of empathy for him.
Do you realize how much trouble you've caused me? Spying on me. Almost disturbing my sleep this afternoon. Telling policemen about me?
You deserve to die, boy.
Of course. I could give you something I don't have. A choice.
Forget about me, Charlie. Forget about me, and I'll forget about you. What do you say, Charlie?
Well, that's why I was very disappointed with the sequel, because I thought they should have concentrated more on his backstory, and they cast Chris Sarandon again, which would have been fantastic, instead of doting on this crappy thing about his sister getting revenge on his death. It just didn't work, and it was very cheap and very badly done. And it wasn't directed by Tom Holland, some stupid TV director. But they had a wasted opportunity there. And even in the first film, there should have been just a little bit of an inkling. I know it concentrates mostly on Charlie because you're supposed to empathise with his character. And Jerry's the threat. But a little bit of a backstory there would have made it a bit more weightier.
Well, yeah. With the sequel, yeah, it would have been cool to see like a backstory on, yeah, Jerry's character. And, yeah, he was still young enough there where you could have, yeah, with a little bit of makeup and maybe style his hair a bit differently, and you could have made him look a bit younger, like, you know, have the whole origin, I guess, of how he became a vampire would have been interesting. But also, like, this scene where you get to see, first scene with Charlie and Evil Ed, like, you know, are these guys, are they really friends, or are they just dudes that kind of run into each other at school, and because of this situation, do they kind of become a bit closer? Because nearly the whole time, like, Evil Ed's like, you know, giving him the shit.
Winding him up.
Yeah, like, come on, she finally found out what you really like. You know, yeah. And he's calling him evil and all that stuff.
And I don't think friends do that to people. They're like, that
I mean, friends do take the piss out of each other, but it seems like it's a little bit more
mean-spirited.
Mean-spirited than,
yeah, than your good friend would be.
Yeah, another thing I wanna mention, which, it's been publicized a fair bit, but I still don't hear a lot of people talk about it, a lot of fans talk about it, but just a lot of the gay undertones of the film, you know what I mean? Like the whole thing with Jerry and his, you know, is this guy just his, you know, his watcher or, you know?
No, I think he's bi.
Yeah, like,
I think he's bi. Yeah, it's just like, it's a bit, you know.
And then, I mean, almost like, you know, three quarters of the cast was gay, you know? I mean, Roddy McDowell was gay.
But did the director know that? The writer? I mean, it was in the public knowledge that Roddy McDowell was gay at that time.
Yeah, but... I think when I listen to the commentary, I don't believe, yeah, outside of Roddy, I don't believe that, no, it was pretty much a surprise when he found out later on, because, what's the actress that plays?
And Amanda Beers.
Yeah, Amanda Beers, yeah, she's a lesbian, and also, Stephen Jeffries, yeah, he had his alternate career, let's just say, you know.
In gay porno, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, never seen any.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you just thought I'd throw that out there for a little bit of a trivia, but yeah.
But it doesn't come across as kind of too obvious, though, does it? It's just kind of very subtle.
No. Well, it ain't Nightmare on Elm Street too obvious. You know, it's just kind of that. Or even like, you know, probably maybe one of the most obvious parts is like later on where Jerry does turn Evil Ed, yeah, that's kind of,
and he takes him into his cloak or coat or whatever he's wearing there, like, into the alley.
There's a bit of a bit of an undertone there, but yeah, I love Evil Ed's laugh. He's got the
not me. Yeah. Now I used to admire you. You know that? Well, of course. That was before I found out what a fake you were. Peter Vincent, the great vampire killer of
D. He's a bit like a junior Jack Nicholson, isn't he?
Yeah.
Very much so.
A little bit, yeah.
It's a pity he had to give all that up and get into this other stuff, because he's a good actor. He's a good performer.
Well, he did kind of have a bit of a Renaissance a few years ago. He came back and he's done some other stuff. I haven't really seen much of it, but...
But, sorry, didn't he do this thing directed by Robert Englund?
Yeah, Evil 976 or something? Evil,
yeah, that was pretty average.
Think much of that film, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay.
I mean, when I met Robert Englund, he reckons that effects companies and stuff promised them the world on that film and they just didn't deliver.
Really? So yeah. It wasn't really his fault?
Nah,
he's a good director.
Nah.
He built it up pretty well, but the other stuff wasn't too good.
Yeah.
It's a shame. And the guy, I can't remember the actor who plays, he's offsided, Jerry Day.
Something Stark, I believe, isn't it?
Not Jonathan Stark, is it?
Nah.
No. Yeah, should have done our research. Might have been him, yeah. I haven't seen him in anything else. Have you?
Yes, he's in House 2.
House 2 is what?
He's in that. That's probably the only other thing.
The second house?
Yeah, that's the only film I know him from. It's called House 2, The Second Story.
But we were just talking about it. He just come up on screen.
Yeah.
That's strange. But I tell you that the set design of this movie is very well done to do. It was all done on the back lot.
Yeah, you can kind of tell that it is some sort of a back lot. It has that kind of old Hollywood-like
feel about it.
There, like the Munsters or...
Yeah, right on. It, you know? Right on. But like I said, I saw this at the Palladium Theatre in the city in Bourke Street when it first came out. And there was no kind of big brouhaha about it. It just came and it went. And it wasn't until they re-released it on home video that it built up its following.
Well, even now, like, it does have its place in, in the annuals of horror and even vampires and that, but it's not, to me anyway, from, like, my experience of talking to people online, different forums and stuff, it's not usually the vampire film that people, it's not their go-to vampire film. You know, most people say something like Lost Boys.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. How would you compare it to?
Yeah, or like Interview with a Vampire or something, you know what I mean? But, I mean, I really dig those films, especially Lost Boys, but this will always, I think, be my favourite vampire flick.
And it's miles ahead of all this Twilight twaddle.
Oh, well,
it's just chalk and cheese.
That just goes without saying, doesn't it? I mean, to me, Dave, vampires don't twinkle in the sunlight, you know?
They do not, and turn into rabid werewolves with no underpants on, so... You know, you've got to get with it, pal. Yeah. Get real. I mean, vampires are a threat.
I love this scene, though. Like, you see this a lot in horror films, you know, when a character is observing something they shouldn't, and then all of a sudden, the attention's on
them. They get observed.
The evil is observing them, and then they're in trouble. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very similar to, like you mentioned before, Rear Window, when Jimmy Stewart is picking on Raymond Burr, supposedly... from murdering his wife, then he gets spied on by him.
Yeah, well, that another similar thing. There's one party in Jason Lives where this guy's observing Jason murdering this this caretaker, old guy, and then all of a sudden Jason, after finish killing the caretaker, turns and look at this guy and starts coming after him. You know, that's a very nightmarish kind of a thing. Yeah?
Mm. But no vampires, though. No. Can you imagine that, Jason as a vampire? Would you accept that?
That's just not on the plate with you. That doesn't make sense. That's just too weird.
Okay. But
how many times have we seen this trope, though, where a character, like, knows that there's this threat and nobody will believe them?
Well, that's what I said, the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of the time it is. Like, even though he's obviously a teenager, this guy, but usually you see it a lot with young children, you know. They know something's up and no one will believe them.
Yeah, and do you think the other thing I was going to ask you about this too is do you think it's dated or do you think it's of its time or do you think it still works today? Has had that look about it?
I'd say probably the only thing that dates the film at all is the scene later on when Jerry's stalking him in the nightclubs and stuff.
Like, oh, the music?
Kind of, yeah, the music and just like Amanda Beer's, you know, hit some of her dance moves and the wardrobe, I guess, dates the film a little bit. But besides that, I think it's pretty timeless.
It still works, doesn't it?
It works. I love his jacket, Jerry. He's got that really long trench coat.
Vinyl or leather, I think. Grey vinyl.
Yeah, it's really...
Yeah. And I love the lady who plays his mum. She's kind of very kind of dotty, and it really works. And I will go into the remake soon, but it got most of its money back, but it wasn't a big hit because it was a low-budget movie. Made by a major studio, Columbia Pictures, and it came out on video, when the video came out? Late 70s, I think? 78, 77? VHS and Beta. And I have this on those, and I've got, like, the print on it now, like Jesse said, is just stunning. It's really beautiful, really clean, great colour. And I want to see this documentary. It's going to be really interesting. But do you know if they get all the cast together?
Yeah.
With the doco? Even Stephen Jeffries?
Yeah. I love this house, though.
Oh, it's got a
really
beautiful.
Good design to it.
It's great. Oh, you know it's a set, but it looks great.
Oh, yeah. I love all the clocks, like Howie Jerry's got all the clocks.
He's a collector of antiques, isn't he?
Yeah, to remind him that, yeah, when he's got to go back to his coffin.
Spot on.
But I love, like, you know, how this had, like, its atmosphere and it like, really was arcing back to...
Yeah, old school.
To the old school vampire flicks. And when this was made, this was, you know, like, no one was really making vampire films when this came out. You know, it was more about... You know, all the slashes and all that sort of stuff, what I love, you know, Friday the 13th and whatnot, you know what I mean? Like, it was kind of, it was not the thing to do when this came out, make a vampire flick. And even Columbia even said that, you know, like, they didn't really have a lot of hope for this film. And they kind of left Tom Holland and left him alone to, you know,
to his own devices,
yeah. They didn't take over anything and left him alone to do the film, which is why I think it is such a great film, because, you know, that's a lot of the time when, you get a talented filmmaker, when they leave them alone, let them do what they need to do to make the film great. Yeah, that's when you get some of the best films, you know?
Yeah. And I think there was a kind of a bit of a rise in these kind of films, but not a lot. Because, like I said, it didn't make all its money back. But it's harkened back to, like, the Peter Vincent's characters, a combination, of course, of Peter Cushing and Vincent Price.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, Peter Cushing was in a fair few of those Hammer movies. Roddy McDowall, I've got to use that line.
No one wants to see, was it me or vampires at all anymore? All they want is demented madmen running around in ski masks, hacking up young virgins.
That's right on, mate.
It's not a ski mask, though, right? It's a hockey mask.
Yeah, but other people have ripped that off, haven't they? What's he wearing, The Burning?
Ah, that's just makeup.
Oh, I thought he had some kind of a mask or a cover.
Oh, well, I've seen that movie for a long time. I'm not a big fan of that slasher.
Oh, I don't mind it.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Madman is a much better movie, I think.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, definitely.
It's okay. We watched it. We were just telling everybody, too, that we had a Halloween marathon, was it nearly 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, around that.
And that was fantastic. It was a bit of a cool night, but
we had outdoors in your backyard on the projector.
Yeah, we set up the projector in the backyard and... speakers there, and we had Jesse's brother Chris and his friend Bailey, and
it was a good night. I love this scene. Yeah, this scene where he comes and he's telling Evil Ed what's going on. He's getting his advice on how to stop the vampire and that.
What? Come on, Evil, I haven't got time to explain. Just tell me what to do to protect myself.
Very funny, Brewster.
Evil, please, I'm not kidding. Just tell me what to do.
Don't call me evil anymore. Why should I help you anyway?
Look, I've got $8. You help me and it's yours.
Well, far be it from me to turn down a fool's money.
Where and when do you expect the vampire to attack?
In my bedroom, tonight.
Start with this. But you must have total faith in it for it to work. Then get some garlic. Links of the stuff you can wear around your neck and hang from your window. If he comes for you, that'll be the way. Then, oh, of course, there's holy water. But you got to get a priest to say a blessing over it first.
That's it?
I'm afraid so. But your best protection right now, Charles, is that a vampire cannot enter your house without being invited by the rightful owner first.
Are you sure about that?
Positive.
Thank you.
But the thing is, right, like, the one weird thing about his character, right, Charlie, is he really a horror fan? Like, even though, like, he says he watches Peter Vincent and that, and then Amy's, like, oh, yeah, saying how much he loves Peter Vincent's show and stuff. If he know, like, shouldn't he know all this? Like, why is he going to Evil Ed, like, asking him about how do you defeat a vampire? Like, he's supposed to be a horror fan, and he should know this stuff.
Yeah, but that's more fictional, though. What he's watching in these fictional horror movies, Evil Head might have more of an idea of how historically people supposedly killed vampires.
Yeah, Yeah, I guess.
You know, so maybe he needs his advice and his help. Because he just gets the Hollywood side of things, or the English side of things, you know?
Yeah,
he needs more backup. And he might be a bit of a coward if he tried to do it himself.
I think you're just helping the movie along there. I think you're...
What, you're giving it more than what it should be? Yeah, but I said to you, Jesse, before, it's only a movie, not a documentary.
Movies are life.
But it's fun. People sometimes dig too deep.
I'm not digging too deep.
Not you. I'm just saying.
He's just got some great lines. And just the way he delivers the lines.
Yeah, the way he reads his lines.
Oh, yeah. Got great, great delivery.
He's terrific.
You know what he reckons after this movie came out, Stephen Geoffreys, he'd be like on the subway or something, and random kids like come up to him and like be going, do the evil head laugh, do the evil head laugh. Like he was like just constantly doing it, he reckons, when the film came out.
Oh, there you go. Now, Charlie's coming down the stairways with a pink shirt on and blue pants. Now, what does that say about him? He's got bad taste in clothing or
probably. He's trying to get a pickup?
Yeah, it was the 80s. Everybody was very colorblind back then.
I just love how cool he plays his character, though, Chris Sarandon, Jerry. Yeah? Like, the way he just shows up at his house, you know, like it's all good.
Yeah.
And, of course, now he's invited. Now, you know.
Yeah, he can Charlie's come at any time.
Power.
But good-looking actors too, both of them. I mean, all the cast are good-looking, very appealing. Yeah. And the only thing about Blu-ray is you can see all the makeup. There's no kind of shine there, but it doesn't matter. It's a movie. Like I said, it's not real life.
I don't really notice that.
But look at that.
Now, what's this? What's you've told me before, Dave? What's this little tune that Jerry whistles as?
Strangers in the Night.
That's it. Yeah.
It's a Frank Sinatra tune from the 1960s. Very popular.
I believe that was his idea, I think, Chris
Sarandon. Chris Sarandon, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, get it? And it kind of matches up. Strangers the Night.
That's it, sure does.
But no, it builds up the atmosphere really well. And you feel for his character.
Oh, yeah, sure do.
And you don't know what this character, this Jerry Dandridge, is going to do to him next.
Well, yeah, like I said, at first, you know, he is somewhat, for a vampire, he is kind of diplomatic, you know, like he's trying to put the wind up this kid and just like, you know, like, I am what I am, you know, but leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly.
Alone,
well, what would you do then in that position, Jerry? Would you, Jesse, would you report him? Or would you, what would you do? Would you let him go? Ignore him? If he was threatening somebody around you, you'd do something.
Well, at the end of the day, he's killing innocents. You know, he's killing
innocent
people.
Yeah, but they're not kind of connecting you in any way with him. Like these girls he picks up, these whores, these prostitutes.
Well, yeah, I suppose they've got nothing to do with me, personally. But, like, I don't know, though, but wouldn't you also be thinking, like, I don't know if he's going to keep his word and not come after me? Like, he may change his mind, you know what I mean? He could at any time, really.
Yeah, because how did it spark it off? Because he reported him to the cop and he saw them carrying out a coffin.
Yeah.
So he's kind of put the wind up his sails, hasn't he?
Pretty much.
Yeah. I would just ignore him. Yeah, I wouldn't keep going after him.
Yeah, but you're the non-confrontational type.
I know I am.
I like to be the hero.
I love this scene
where he's walking past the door and you don't see his reflection. I never noticed that because on the VHS tape, it's always been cut off. But even when I remember when I first noticed that when the DVD came out, and I was just fascinated.
Clever.
Like, how did they do that stuff? You see, Dave, like, as much as I enjoy a lot of the modern films now, filmmaking has lost some of its magic. Yeah, you no longer can watch a movie and think, how did they do that? Whereas back then, it was always, you know, your mind was always working overtime sometimes, you know, with some of these films, because you'd just be thinking, how did the filmmakers pull that off?
Yeah, because most of it was all done in camera on the set as it was being filmed. It wasn't done in post-production later on, which kind of mucks everything up now.
I love this shot where he's looking at Charlie. He's looking at the window to see what Jerry's up to, and Jerry's coming out of the closet behind him. Yeah. Ah, he's coming out of the closet, Dave.
Ah, there you go. There's another. And he's got soft focus behind Charlie there. And as he walks closer to him, of course, he comes into focus. Very clever.
And he just sets it off where he just notices there's someone behind him.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah, God, look at that. Just grabs him by the throat. Like a Pennywise scene there. Oh, look at that. Is that a pinball, little pinball game there?
Yeah, I had those sort of things when I was a kid.
Yeah, a little circular thing you hold in your hand. You had to get the beads in the holes.
Yeah, but I had like the bigger version.
The full-size version. Yeah. Oh.
This is the scene I was talking about earlier where yeah, he gives him the warning and tells him that, you know, he doesn't really have a choice to be a vampire. But that's the thing, though, like, you know, if you were Jerry, like, it's not like he's, like, I think he, like, obviously I think he does take pleasure in killing and all that, but at the end of the day, he doesn't have a choice. He's got to do it.
No.
If he doesn't do it, he's going to die, you know? Like, he needs the blood to survive, so.
And the thing of it is, he's, I think Charlie, he's going to, his life is going to end if he doesn't conform to what Jerry says him, tells him to do or not to do. Poor Peter Vincent's career's at an end because his ratings are down low on his TV, so he has to change his outlook on life or the way he looks at certain things because he's a bit of a coward. But he builds himself up and he gets better as he goes along. And little they all change, don't they? All the characters change. Even the girlfriend, Amanda Beer, she becomes half a vampire. Stephen Jeffries becomes a wolf. So that's a good thing about good filmmaking, good storytelling. Yeah. The characters change, not literally, yeah, but not literally, but
well, yeah, physically, I guess.
Physically, yeah, yeah, in both ways.
I love this effect, Dave. I think a little while ago I asked you, how do you think they done this effect where he stabbed
the pencil through the hand?
Yeah,
that's brilliant. That
very well done effect.
Excellent.
And the makeup, like I really like the makeup, the vampire makeup in this. I've heard some people take the piss out of it. You know, they reckon like the mouth's overdone, like it's sort of.
But it's supposed to be, for Christ's sake. People like just nitpick.
Yeah.
Go back to your Twilight twit. Enjoy that. But that is stunning makeup, you know, with that full face and that large mouth and the contact lenses in the eyes and the ears and the discoloration on the skin.
Yeah.
And they don't do it with any really fades or dissolves, it's just quick cuts.
It just really sells it too.
Yeah. And see that? A cut to it and it's back to normal again. That's brilliant, that.
Really well done.
Doesn't draw attention to itself. I mean, compared to the old, I mean, they were good, but the old Lon Chaney werewolf movies, when they used dissolves when he changed, it's just a very, very dated now, and it's kind of drags the film down a bit. Well, when you watch stuff like this, when it's just all done on the set and in camera, no, it's just stunning. People have got to appreciate some of these old movies for what they are. Don't put them down. Just watch them and bloody love them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, love them or hate them, you know what I mean?
No, like, don't hate them. Get something out of them. Just appreciate all the work that went into them.
Oh, that's right. Well, it's like I said, you know, as much as I love some of the modern films, you know, some of the magic of filmmaking has been lost through, you know, digital arts, as much as I think digital effects are cool.
And I'm not sure, he's watching a sequence from an old vampire movie on TV. I'm not sure whether that's from a real, I think it's from one of the Hammer movies.
Yeah, it's from one of the Christopher Lee Dracula films, didn't you
say? Yeah, Peter Cushing, yeah, that's it. Oh, true, and he's hosting it, isn't he? But they show a sequence. Now, that's clever. He's draining the blood from his fingers. And they just used a very, very fast tracking in shot, which a lot of the Italians use in their movies a lot. They overdo it, but Tom Holland does it very sparingly here, and it works.
See, because he's hurt him now he's really pissed off.
Yeah, there's no way back now, is there?
No way back. He's totally decided to.
Yeah, that's it.
And he's going to have fun with it, too.
Like a cat and a mouse. There he goes. Just popped on screen now. The great Roddy McDowall. He's been around since the 90s. I spotted him in an old George Formby movie. George Formby was an English comic from the 1930s. He played the ukulele. And there was a very young Roddy McDowall, probably about 6 or 7 years old, sitting in a train carriage laughing his head off. And he was fantastic even back then. He appeared in such films as How Green Was My Valley, My Friend Flicker. Then he went on to become a great adult actor in the 1950s and the 60s.
Wasn't he in one of the Lassie movies?
Yeah, Lassie Come Home.
Yeah. Right, he was on. He had a really good episode of Columbo too. I remember that, where he, like, I think he killed one of his uncle. I think his rich uncle.
With a bomb, wasn't it?
With a bomb, yeah.
Yeah, great. And, of course, Legend of Hell House, another good horror film written by Richard Matheson. Charlie's just having that scene with him where he's trying to convince him to help him deal with Jerry, and he won't have none of it.
Well, he thinks he's a nut, yeah. I mean, like, I mean, come on, if some kid
come up to you, yeah,
he's like, yeah, I got this vampire next door, you know, can you help me destroy him? Of course you're going to think he's crazy, you know.
And how old do you think Roddy would be here, in his 50s?
Yeah, about that. You know, one thing I've always found weird, like, what have they done to his hair?
Yeah, they've powdered his hair up to make it look whiter.
That doesn't work.
That's too much.
It's too much.
Yeah. It looks like that, but it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. It's draw attention to itself.
Doesn't matter. I'm just pointing it out as well.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah, I noticed when I saw the pictures, but he's not that old.
Yeah. Oh, well, he did, I think he might even have a little bit of age makeup in this, because I remember seeing him in 84?
Yeah.
And he looks a lot younger in that movie.
Yeah, so put a bit of latex on him to make him look older. Wrinkled him up a bit. Yeah, because the crow's feet there. But always been very likeable.
He's got such an expressive face too. Like, I just love his reaction to what Charlie's saying. Like, you can just see it on his eye, in his eyes. You know, he's like, I've really got to get away from this kid.
Yeah, look at him. Look at his face.
The way he looks at him, he touches him. Yeah,
fantastic.
The way he just like cowardly tries to get away.
He would have been He would have made a fantastic Dr. Smith.
Oh, I totally
agree.
Mate,
when in the remake, it would have been spot on.
Oh, he could have easily still done that by now. I mean, what was that, only about 12 years after this movie?
Yeah, and they stuffed it up, didn't they? Yeah. We won't go into that, but he would have been phenomenal.
I love the look that he does here as he's driving away, as Charlie's still taunting him, trying to get him to help. Boy, he just looks at him.
Off he goes.
He's off.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Great coup getting him. Yeah, little Stephen Jeffries. Look at the gear he's got. What sneakers on? Brown pants, a green jacket.
He's got great taste,
doesn't he? Great taste. What's he got? He's got a t-shirt with the sun on. Is it from the Japan or something?
Maybe.
Japanese.
But I've noticed, though, like, as you were saying before, so you're of the opinion you think that Stephen Jeffries is the best thing about the film? You think he steals the whole movie, do you?
Well, when he's on screen, he steals it, yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say that nearly every scene he's in, like even this scene where, Amy and Evil Ed have gone into Charlie's room, is kind of set up like a Fright Night set. Your focus is on him a lot of the time, yeah?
Yeah, because they're the straight actors. Yeah. Steven's more the comedy relief.
Well, that's it, yeah. He livens it up a
bit. I mean, without him in there, it would have been a bit dull, I think. Would have been good, but it wouldn't have been as sparky.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I don't think. Yeah.
It's good balance there, and it doesn't kind of... That stay, it's welcome. Oh, they're about the same size too, aren't they?
Yeah, he's a very slight man. Have a Michael laugh at Evil Ed does. that's hilarious.
Sticks his tongue out.
A funny guy.
Yeah.
Like, if you had to be around a vampire, he'd be a good one to be around, because at least he'd make you laugh maybe when he tried to kill you.
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah.
But this scene I really, really enjoy. Yeah, it's like what I was talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Where the heart comes from from the film, you know, where... Charlie pretty much begs Dave Vincent to help him now, you know what I mean? And now that he believes him and stuff, he'll eventually help him. But the way he plays with him, just like, there's a lot of heart to it.
Yeah.
But like I've mentioned before, Dave, kind of their friendship they developed, and this reminds me a lot of our friendship. You know what I mean? And there's about the same age gap almost.
Yeah, about 30 years between.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of, they're unlikely friends, but it works there. They've got a lot of chemistry.
So what we should do a movie together, Jesse.
Yeah.
Kind of based on that, yeah. In real life horror, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Also, like I've mentioned, our friendship reminds me of, like, of Marty McFly and Doc Brown, you know? Like, you kind of like Doc Brown, how you have all the equipment. And I was like, like Marty, how Marty wants to use all Doc's equipment. It's kind of like...
Yeah, you've got the ideas.
Yeah, me, like, I always want to use...
You've got the software and I've got the hardware.
All your equipment.
Right on, John. Oh, and I never noticed you got a picture of Peter Vincent, Karloff and Lugosi. Look at that. I never noticed that before, and that's nuts.
Well, that's a sign of great filmmaking.
Yeah, but you're putting these bits and pieces in there. Set dressing. Yeah, very clever. Yeah, that's when they did The Raven together. There was a movie called The Raven. Karloff and Lugosi did about four or five movies together.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that film.
Yeah, and they did a movie called The Raven where Lugosi grew a beard, or it might have been a fake beard, but there's a shot of them, the still that Peter Vincent has on his cabinet. What Charlie's talking to, which I've never noticed before. And I've seen this, I don't know, probably about 30 or so times. It's weird.
I just also wanted to mention that I really like the score in this film too. It's really well done by Brad Fidel. He also did the score for The Terminator too.
Really good
composer. He didn't really do a lot of movies, I don't think.
No.
This and Terminator, maybe a couple others or so, but...
Yeah, I don't know why.
Wouldn't you agree this scene, like, it's not just... Jerry turning Amy into a vampire is also like, sort of a subtext for taking her virginity too, I think. You know, like that's definitely.
Well, that's the other thing too. They've used this concept before where the vampire or the mummy or whatever has had some lost love they've given up or been killed in their past lives, and they see a reincarnation, so-called reincarnation of the person, and they try to make them into their image or entice them.
The last act in this film, like, you know, a lot of films, you know, the final act, that kind of drops off, but this film has a great final act, I think.
Oh, great build-up.
Where Charlie and Peter Vincent go to face off against Jerry. I just love his line, "Welcome to Fright Night."
You're taking him off.
Yeah, like, he's like almost kind of taking the piss out of Peter Vincent, isn't he?
Mm. Oh, he is.
Yeah.
That was intentional, yeah.
Pretty much. But what is his keeper? Like, I've heard, or he's watching.
He's supposed to be a ghoul or something.
Well, according to Tom Holland, he's a vampire. That
he's offsider.
Yeah, that's what he says, and that's kind of like his rationalization of it. But I mean, the way he dies, like, he kind of, you know, turns into
dust or sand or something, isn't it?
Yeah, he kind of goes all, like, mummified and all that kind of thing, like a zombie almost. He starts to look like.
Yeah, and he turns into a skeleton, doesn't he? He's given his skeletal at the end of it.
Yeah, he does. Yeah,
but just look at him. Look at that swagger.
He's just very cool, man.
Very cool, very laid back.
He's another very good actor, I think, Chris Sarandon. Yeah, he should have had a bigger career, I think.
Yeah, I think he did a lot of stage work, yeah, Jesse.
He's good in Dog Day Afternoon, which was made a fair while before this.
And he's in that other thing, horror thing called The Sentinel, but it was a bit average, that film.
Yeah, Michael Winner. I really was not a fan of that film. He even said that he reckons the director had no idea.
He was a nuts. Michael Winner, nobody's got anything good to say about him.
Well, he also, you know, like, he turns up in Bordello of Blood, Chris Sarandon.
Does he? I don't remember him in that. What is he playing that?
Yeah, he's the minister. He's like the head of the church and stuff.
Oh, is he a vampire in that?
10 years after this. No, he's not a vampire. He's just like, he's involved with the vampire.
He's a transsexual again.
Hmm?
He's a transsexual vampire. Combination of Dog Day Afternoon and Fright Night. There he goes, just threatening with the crucifix. And he knows he's for real, and he's backing away.
Your favourite line, you have to have
faith for that. You'll hear that at the beginning of our intro.
Yeah, that's it. Now, come on, that's a bit friendly.
That's very gay. Just put his arm around him. He's leaning on him. He's behind him. So what does that say?
Now, is Peter Vincent more horrified about what he just, seen
what he just did or what happened?
Yeah. Yeah, like,
why did he run off?
Horrified about?
Why? He's trying to call for help and the phone's been disconnected. It's Charlie's house. Running upstairs.
See, my father, he was a big fan of this film.
Really?
He was the one that first showed it to me. He used to love all Evil Ed's lines. Like, no joke, like, at least once every week when, you know, he'd be making one of my meals. He'd come out with a line,
"Dinner's in the oven."
But look at that makeup. He's got great, Stephen Geoffrey's got great makeup on there with the crucifix burned into his forehead and veins shooting out of his neck. Gold contact lenses, large fangs.
He's almost like a rat, isn't he? Like,
yeah, ratish look about him.
Looks like.
And even his hair's gone ratish. Look at him.
The effects in this is just a very.
Oh,
well,
they're
well
stunning.
Done film, yeah?
They're really well done.
I wonder what kind of a makeup job that was, how many hours.
Oh, that's just an animatronic there, a puppet. But
you reckon?
Yeah, it's a puppet. But then as he gets, it's a puppet.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah, silly me.
Yeah, it's too much, Jesse, for a makeup job.
I thought it might have just been an actor with the, like, a...
No, well, he's got the real actor there with the arms, but that's just all a makeup course, animatronic on top. You know, because it wasn't even near the wall before, there were real arms coming through, but near the fake arms on the
I feel really stupid now because now I'm looking at it and it's
You're
so obvious.
Kidding! All this time you've seen this film, you thought that was a makeup job.
Oh, I didn't. I don't know if I thought that the whole time. I don't know. I think I just got lost in the moment there.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. That's the power of good filmmaking.
But see, even here, like, you really feel sorry for this kid.
Yeah, there
is
for
real
there. Yeah,
and
you
can tell Peter Vincent feels
because
sorry
because it wasn't his choice, was it?
Well, it was kind of, yeah, become a vampire or get killed, you know?
Yeah. But they even got the blood look. Look at the colour of that blood.
Yeah, it looks
it doesn't
really
look overdone. It looks like real blood. Looks really good. Well, look at him. That really good acting talent there behind that.
Oh, yeah, he definitely had acting chops from it now.
Fantastic. Poor man. He died, I think he was only in his 60s, early 70s. Bloody cancer. The worst thing bloody God has put on this earth. Yeah, we come to the end now, folks. Can't believe that print. That is stunning print, mate. Oh, look at that. That's phenomenal. And that's animation there, but that's brilliant, that.
Oh, yeah. I love... This is a really freaky looking bat, I reckon.
Oh, it's vampire, demonic, isn't it?
Vampire bat. Yeah. It's just so ferocious.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. Look at the bloody thing. Trying to get to his jugular. And Charlie just thinks a bit of sunlight will help there. Oh, got him.
Hey, wouldn't that mean since Charlie got bit...
Yeah, I was just going to say that. But doesn't he kind of turn into a vampire in the second one at some point?
The second one he does.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a runoff from this one.
Yeah, but I'm just saying though, that would kind of turn him.
But he didn't get completely bitten though, did he? He was just on the surface.
Well, I don't know, they don't really...
He didn't suck any blood out of him.
Never really get like a good shot of him.
I don't think it's sucking any blood out of him, just bit him.
Yeah, I guess.
See, what happened to become a vampire, their blood has to go into your blood?
Yeah, I suppose that's more like a zombie, isn't it? If you get a scratch off a zombie, you can become a zombie.
Oh. But as you know, that all the tropes that were in, that were written about, to deal with vampires in Hollywood movies were made up. A lot of people think all this stuff comes from the original book by Bram Stoker, Dracula. But a lot of that stuff came later on in the Hollywood movies, even Nosferatu, with the stake through the heart and all that. None of that was in the book. You got that shocking scene with Amanda Bears.
You know the thing is, you're going to probably think I'm really stupid for this, but I actually kind of thought that was maybe a different actress. I didn't think it was maybe Amanda Bears because she just looks so different.
Yeah, it was
this
got a
vampire
wig on
form. And of course, I didn't realise for a while that that's actually her on the poster for the film.
Really?
Yeah, that big cloud, that's actually her face. You know that, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I knew that. Yeah. But that's a stunning effect with the large mouth and the fangs. And you say people knock that and say, think it's overdone.
Yeah, they don't like the makeup design of it. They think, it's kind of overdone too much, yeah.
Oh, that's frightening.
It gives them, like, a good animalistic look to them, you know what I mean? Like, vampires...
Feral.
Exactly. Like, I mean, even though I know, like, I kind of agree that it is kind of cool for vampires to have, like, the romantic kind of lure about them, you know what I mean, on the surface. But, like, you should, after a while, see... for what they really are, the demon that they are, you know what I mean? I love this part, how they open up all the basement and the way Jerry's trying to get to David Vincent. He can't...
Peter Vincent.
Peter Vincent, sorry, I meant to say.
And now there's no way out for him.
I love the effect, though, where they kill him. The way he gets blown back.
Yeah, that's really good.
And he becomes like that, like demon kind of a skeleton-like form of a creature. I suppose that's supposed to be like even more like what he really is.
Yeah,
though.
Because they never say how old he is. How he must be a couple hundred years old.
I think in the sequel it's mentioned. I think he was 500 years old if you want to include that.
I thought that.
This continuity. But I mean, this film's far superior to the sequel, but I did rewatch the sequel not long ago, and it has kind of grown on me in spots. Like, there are some things I don't mind about it.
Never lie. It's great stuff.
We're just coming up to the epilogue of the film now. I always thought this scene at the end where you think, is it Evil Ed? Is he still alive? Kind of thing. Like, I think it was a real shame that Stephen Geoffreys wasn't in the sequel. I mean, practically he wasn't in the sequel because it was either do the sequel or 976 Evil with... Robert England, and that's what he chose to do. I think that was a big mistake to make. You know, the sequel would have been, it would have been a great benefit to have him in the sequel. You know what I mean? But that's Fright Night in a nutshell. Great flick. Well, I really enjoyed that day. That was a really good conversation about a classic we both love.
Yeah, it was fantastic, Jesse. And 1985 film. It's still good. Still holds up. And I hope everybody enjoys listening to it.
Thanks for listening, folks. And just remember, Dave, just tell it to call you Billy.
Fear.